This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Good evening. The current time is 7:02, and you were tuned in here to WRFL Lexington. My name is Grant.
And I'm Mitch.
And up until about 8 p.m. tonight, we're going to be here. This is Tech Talks here on WRFL.
That's right. This episode, we've got quite a lot to talk about, a lot to unpack from earlier today in the controversial FCC order about net neutrality. What it means, what it is, what will be, what drama happened at the actual hearing about the order, and what the next steps are moving forward, whether or not we can. It's going to be real informative, a really good episode.
All right, and we're going to be here kind of breaking that down, working our way through everything going on, because certainly there is a lot to unpack here. So by all means, Mitch, if you want to start, go right ahead.
So this story kind of begins at the beginning of the internet. It was kind of a new thing, and as many things, like with drones that we've talked about being a good example, when a new technology surfaces, sometimes the government doesn't really know how or whether they should even regulate something. For example, drones. The government didn't really know how to approach drones, and since then, they've seen some of the troubles that drones have caused and decided to put them under the jurisdiction of the Federal Flight Administration, the FAA. Or FAA. Federal, or the Flight and Aviation Administration, something like that. So, the internet, seeing as it was like a telecom service, they decided when it came out to put it under the Federal Communications Commission, which handles things like telephone, radio, TV broadcasts, etc. And ever since that happened, the government kind of took a light touch, no touch type bipartisan approach to the internet in that they didn't really want to regulate it. They've left it to its own devices. And a lot of the people claim, this is the crux of their argument, that for 20, 30 plus years, that the internet has grown on its own, that it's led innovation on its own without being regulated, that it doesn't need to be federally regulated, that it should be a completely open market type deal. The problem with that approach is that the internet service providers are the ones that actually have access to the internet, and then they sell access to their system to us consumers. And so what this can mean, and this is the largest argument about net neutrality, is that it lets large telecoms play sort of a war game on the internet itself. For example, Netflix is a large presence on the internet. It accounts for something like, I want to say earlier this year we said it was around 18% of all of the national bandwidth used in the previous year.
Yeah, yeah.
Sound about right?
So on any given day, that means we can expect that one out of every 6 megabytes of data on the internet is involved with streaming Netflix.
Yeah. And so for companies like Comcast or Disney or NBC Universal, who are wanting to make their own streaming services, this puts them in Netflix as their direct competitor. So what they can do, since they control access to the internet as a ISP or internet service provider, as an ISP, they can choose to put their service at a higher priority, meaning their videos will be cleaner, they'll load faster, they won't buffer, there'll be a much sharper image, and they can throttle Netflix down to where it's slower, and it's a lower priority, other traffic gets ahead of it, and you're stuck with the stereotypical loading. And that's not against the law.
Yeah, I think we lost you there for a second, Mitch, but I think we kept up with the idea. It's that under the original light touch rules, they were allowed to throttle services or websites
that were in direct competition with their own services and websites.
Yes.
In 2015, more or less with the direct guidance of the president, President Obama at the time, the FCC undertook putting in place net neutrality regulations. It had been building for a couple of years with, back in, 2010 and 2012, IPA and SOPA being legislative solutions to this problem. The FCC decided to take it upon themselves and in 2015 made an order related to the internet and net neutrality, classifying it as a Title II service. And Grant, I'll let you break down what the difference is in Title I and Title II classification.
Sure.
For all those of you listening today, with the ruling today, basically the only change that happened today is the FCC reclassified the internet from a Title II service to a Title I service. And Grant's going to flip the news.
All right. So let's discuss for a minute what Title I and Title II is and what these really mean. Back in 1999, under the Clinton administration, when the light touch rules were first taken on, by which we're saying the FCC had some involvement but not a lot of direct engagement with ISPs, we think of that as being a Title I system. The internet in and of itself is not directly regulated under this system, but ISPs more or less have the kind of reign that you can expect from cable companies in that kind of sense, right? So a couple of years ago when they moved to Title II, you're moving it out of kind of the space that cable occupies, right? Because cable, especially luxury cable, is in that sense, right, a luxury. It is a utility, but it's a luxury. And it's less directly regulated than, say, a network station that puts out a broadcast over the radio waves. Or us here at the radio station, we have rules enforced about our use. And so moving the internet to a Title II classification put in place all of these protections such that it means that an internet service provider is responsible for delivering you, unaltered and untampered, the contents of what you're paying for. In some sense, right, I'm trying to think how to say this. When you're in a having a really hard time keeping up with this for a second. It's like Title I is generally less strict about its rules. Title II is where you get into things, what we commonly think of as utilities, phone lines. That's actually a great example. So in this example, if we were going to treat the internet as a Title II thing, then it puts rules in it. It puts rules that then require kind of this equal treatment. What if you had a phone company who, what if you had a phone company which decided who you got to call and how you could contact them, right? I don't feel like that'd be a very fair phone system, right? Oh, I lost you there, Mitch. Come back. So it wouldn't be a very fair system for you to have a phone service if your phone service in turn could pick who you got to contact. And this is effectively what ISPs are getting the ability to do again as of today. They can pick and choose and say, no, you can't visit that website, or we're going to throttle when or how you can get access to it, or we're going to tamper with the speed at which you can stream data, which most often is videos, so that it forces the video quality down. There's kind of a plethora of bad ways in which this can spin. And so I guess my concern with this as a citizen, right? My concern with this is that there's no way to reasonably believe that this is to be, I don't know. I like, how can this really be used responsibly when we consider that the whole purpose of this is locking people out of their service? That's the whole point of what Title II protection means. It means that the paying for the internet gets you all of the internet untethered, unlimited. So moving back, I don't see why an ISP would argue that they want to move back to Title I unless they're expecting not to fulfill someone's access to the whole complete internet. Mitch, you're back on if you want to jump back in. But yeah, we're going to take a break for a minute. The current time is 7:15. I'm going to try to get Mitch reconnected over here so that we can keep this show rolling. So thanks for tuning into Tech Talks here on WRFL. We're going to take a quick little music break and come back. So be sure to keep it locked all the way to the left here at your only alternative left, WRFL Lexington.
If you're hearing this, that means podcast advertising works. WRFL is now accepting new applications for advertising in a selection of our original podcast series. If you or someone you know owns a business in Central Kentucky and would be interested in advertising on WRFL's original podcasts, please email development@wrfl.fm.
Welcome back, Mitch.
Hello, Grant. So, kind of picking up where you had left off before our slight hiccup.
Yeah. So,
You asked if I'd wanted to jump in. I'll let you do a quick recap.
All right. Yeah, let's recap. We were talking about the net neutrality decision today. And the comparison that I was making is that reversing net neutrality would be akin to bringing back some of the old issues that we used to have with phones, or the idea that, like, what if your phone company could decide who you could call or how long your calls could last because of call bandwidth issues, things like that. It just, when you put it into any other form of media besides the internet, it immediately makes it clear how patently absurd this decision really is.
Yeah. Another good comparison is that a lot of people, are in myself included, argue that the internet is a public work. You know, you wouldn't want your water company to give you different rates of water where the cleanest, best water is X price and the median water that might be a little murky is price Y, and then basic water, which is what maybe most people could afford, would be not as clean as the best water. How would you feel about that?
Honestly, when you say it that way, it's horrifying.
It is. I mean, it really is. Not to mention how concerned we've become ever since the last election about our media. You know, a lot of people get most of their media through their phone, which is controlled through internet access, through cellular data, and that is directly controlled by telecoms like AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint. They could filter out what you see. If they wanted a certain candidate to win an election without the Title II protection on their service, filter out negative stories from the candidate that they approve of, meaning that you'll only see the good and bad stories of the candidate they dislike and only good stories of a candidate that they want to put in office, which is again, another thing that's horrifying. That's what we rely on the internet for, is to be able to get access to any news media that we need, to different breakdowns, or any data we need to make a determination for ourselves on certain issues. And this would let them filter what we see.
Yeah, certainly. And so it really only, I can't find a way to rationalize this decision. And
there is no rationalization, man. Let's be real.
I'm
going to take the stance that I really do believe that, you know, Ajit Pai, the chairman of the FCC, I 100% believe that he's just a sellout. You know, I'm sorry. Between the condescending videos that Mr. Pai has made in the past week, one of which was, albeit a joke video made with one of Verizon's vice presidents, joking about, oh, well, we need a puppet FCC chairman. Ajit, how do you feel about the 17-year plan to take over the internet? I'm down. Let's do it. And you know, it's just things like that. I'm sorry. I think he's a sellout. I really do.
But yeah, so I watched his remarks today. I've seen his justifications. I've looked at a lot of what Pai has said will be the benefits to this, and quite frankly, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up.
Support what he said.
Yeah, what he's saying and what he's doing don't really seem to line up to me. And so my concern here is that in a system in which people are already paranoid about the distortion of information, that this is really only another step in that direction. And this is another way in which look, I know in general we don't get political on this show, but this is a decision that at the highest level will impact every American in this country, and it's a decision that I think was made
it was a political decision. It was even said when it was reported that the decision was made along party lines.
Yeah.
It was a 3-2 vote. The three men in the room, not to say that this is a gender thing, but the three male commissioners of the SEC happened to be Republicans, the two females happened to be Democrats, and they voted along that basis. And it's shameful to let something that he himself claimed, and this is a whole other thing that we're getting ready to get into, where we're going to be talking about up next. I want to interject this here.
Right,
the drama that happened today, actually at the hearing, some of the comments made, and then a lot of things that have been happening behind the scenes, such as hearing from different senators. Almost every Democratic senator, almost all 48 of them, signed an open letter to the FCC chairman asking for a delay on today's vote. 13 state attorneys general also asked for a delay on the vote, mainly related to something we've talked about on the show before, being the spoofed comments or the robo comments in which a lot of more or less identity fraud happened in order to make comments on this issue. And taking all of that into account, the FCC still had their decision today. They still chose to have the vote today. And it was really interesting that a lot of them cited Mr. Pai's own words from the 2015 decision in which he dissented, saying, making some comments and basically showing in his words that he was taking action that at the time he wrote those words, he was opposed to. So we're going to break that down here in a minute. But going back to what we were talking about, it just was a purely political decision, no matter how you look at it. It really was. Jumping now to what we just said we were going to talk about.
Actually, are we going to talk about the comments? Because I'd actually really like to discuss this. Right, yeah.
Actually, do we want to cover the drama and then his actual comments from today?
I'm most interested in covering the comments first, but we can get to that.
All right. Well, let's talk about the comments. As you know, for this kind of process, they want public input. And so the FCC opened up a web form on their website where people could come and leave comments. And just, you know, with that process, though, you had to identify yourself and to basically give some basic information in order to leave a comment there for the FCC to review and take in as testimony or, into the hearings. As a result, there were, of the comments submitted, Grant, how many of them were fake? Do you know off the top of your head?
So the last number I saw from the New York Attorney General was about 2 million. And firstly, that puts on the scale of how many people voiced their opinion. We had nearly 10 million people express opinions about net neutrality, which shows that this is an important issue, that 1 in 30 Americans actually bothered to say something about it. But there's been concern from both angles that there have been fraudulently constructed comments submitted to the FCC. And so the last...
Identity theft occurred in order to leave those fraudulent comments.
Yes, that bots were collecting databases full of identities and using the information that they were able to get a hold of to put it onto the FCC's website to masquerade as citizens of the U.S. to leave comments. And most of them were, the vast majority of them, were pro-repeal. And the vast majority of those seem to be put out in a sting in a short window of time by maybe some loosely consolidated group. The language of them is very similar. They were done in a very sporadic way through a very specific window of time. I mean, it seems like something orchestrated, right?
Yeah.
Which is concerning that you see this kind of something verging on mass identity theft used to fraudulently sway American political discourse. That's concerning.
To be fair, during today's comments, one of the commissioners had said in response directly to those fraudulent comments that they actually had, that those 2 million or so comments had no bearing on their decision. Which is concerning, considering that that's one, basically they discounted one-fifth of all of the replies that they saw. I mean, to be fair, when you're talking about 10 million comments, they probably discounted a fair amount of comments that Americans left. But it still nonetheless is concerning that it could be used as evidence to support the repeal, of which there really is no evidence supporting anything, any of the justifications given for the repeal earlier today. At least in my opinion.
It's been quite a trip today, honestly.
Yeah.
So Wow, I'm still just kind of putting it all together today, after you know, all of this amongst exams and such. It's been quite a week.
Being finals, it's been a roller coaster. It was even a roller coaster at the hearing itself.
Because at the hearing itself
earlier today, about 10 minutes before the vote on this issue came up, someone handed Mr. Pye a note. At which he said, at the recommendation of security, we will take a brief break, and broke his session. The commissioners, more or less, were shuffled away. A security officer was seen, at least according to the CNN live stream at the time, instructing everyone in the room to leave their personal effects, that only what is attached to their body could leave the room with them, and to leave the room. They were out of the room for about 10 minutes. All the streams were shut off. And police were seen entering the room with a canine that went around and was sniffing chairs. So it was clear that some kind of threat had been received. The room was cleared. Everyone came back in. Mr. Pye continued his comments and more or less his justification for the order, and then called for the vote, in which the vote was called along party lines. So, like you said, most Americans, Grant, are still trying to process this. That this is just kind of all settling in now. The good news is that there is still a couple of options left to counter this order before it goes into effect. One of which is a 1994 law called the Congressional Review Act. So if you're familiar with the concept of judicial review, and that the Supreme Court can at any time review a piece of legislation and determine its constitutionality. In the same vein, the legislative branch of government can review orders or actions taken by executive branch agencies and determine whether or not they are lawful.
And
whether or not to overturn that. So, the way that the Congressional Review Act reads, there are 60 days.
This was the same thing that was used at the beginning of this administration, at the beginning of this year, to walk back some of the Obama era, especially
Medicare,
like the
Medicaid.
So this is that same
Congressional Review Act is loophole, if you will, the same loophole. It allows a congressman or a senator to introduce a motion in which they will call in. It'll introduce an expedited legislative motion. And so that means that instead of requiring the full 60 votes for a bill to pass and become law, that a simple majority is needed in both just the House and the Senate, just a simple majority, in order to overturn a order or an action and to prevent that order or action from being reissued, but slightly different. So they can't come back 6 months later and say, well, we've tweaked this one component of this order and we're now going to pass it again. They would not be able to do that if your congressmen and your senators went through the process of congressional review.
So that's one of the mechanisms at play.
And at this point, the most likely mechanism. I won't get too much into it. Grant and I had this conversation off air. And like we said, we don't like to get political on this show, but I believe there's some interesting politics behind why I think that the congressional review will actually probably happen. So we will see. In the meantime, if you do want to attempt to have this be your recourse, then you need to call your congressman or your senator. I think it's actions.aclu.org has a page related to this whole process if you want to find out more. You can easily Google it. And probably your best bet.
So that's another method of recourse that's actually happening right now, right? So the ACLU, additionally, is suing the FCC.
Not just the ACLU, a multi-state lawsuit filed by the New York Attorney General. It supposedly will be filed tomorrow, It will include 13 states, of which Kentucky is one of them.
Wow.
Andy Beshear, our Attorney General, actually was a part of the multi-state Attorney General sort of letter that went to the FCC, and all of those states that signed onto that letter are also participating in this lawsuit to challenge its credibility in court. A third option is a lot of states have considered having their own state net neutrality laws, of which some people would argue that that's not, you know, or the FCC order says that's not allowed, but there's some constitutionality involved that they might be able to get around it. So there's two or three options to try to get around this particular issue. The largest and most heavy-hitting option is going to be that congressional review. So make sure you Google how to go about that. There's a lot of information being thrown up today and tonight about this topic and what the options moving forward are. But really, within the next 60 days are going to be the easiest time to get this undone.
All right, Mitch. Well, thank you for helping us unpack this week. There's certainly a lot going on just in the past couple hours. It's been quite a flurry of...
It's not every day that we get to be right on the vein of news.
Yeah.
Normally we have to wait a whole week.
Yeah, it's nice to have things happen on a Thursday because we get to be right on the pulse.
That's right, we're relevant today, everyone.
All right, well, I'll see you when you get back in town, but have a good break.
That's right. Everyone, happy holidays. All those college students out there, enjoy your break. Everyone living in town, enjoy not having 30,000 college students around.
Yeah, it does ease up on the traffic a bit. All right, well, thanks for calling in. Thanks for talking with us. I guess I'll see you around. And we will be continuing our Tech Talks coverage through the week, through the rest of this semester. But thank you for joining in with us on the last 3 years worth of this journey, so to speak. But yeah, we've been doing this for a couple weeks short of 3 years.
3 years in the week of like January 15th.
Yeah.
So ironically, that Thursday, I believe, is when we've rescheduled to go on Trivial Thursdays with Mick Jeffries. And that evening, that Thursday, I believe, is actually going to be our last show. So it's kind of going to be an interesting day. You can catch us hopefully in the morning with Mick and hear the story of how Tech Talks was conceived. And then catch us in the evening for our final show.
Yeah. So thank you for joining us along on this journey, whether you are just listening tonight for the very first time, or if you've been with us since 2014 when we were talking about net neutrality then thanks for tuning in back when we were WRIT. You know,
thanks also for all the podcasts. I mean, we've also had quite a few subscribers on our podcast, so we want to thank all of you all for listening to us. We're not really sure what the future may hold. There may be a few more episodes of just the podcast done outside of a radio setting. Who knows?
Lost you there for a second, Mitch, but go right ahead.
Yeah. So just to recap, for those of our podcast listeners, we don't know what the future holds. There may be just a couple of podcast-only episodes that we may do. It's hard to say what the future holds, but we want to thank you again for sticking with us through this journey. It's meant a lot to both Grant and I to be able to do this for you all. And we really hate to see that Lexington's only Tech Talk show goes, and we can only hope that someone else gets the idea and chooses to follow on.
Yeah. But this has been a really great adventure for both of us. I think this whole thing was kind of pitched out on a limb. I don't know who actually really wanted to originally green light two engineers having a talk show, but here we are.
That would be Mr. Ryan Mosley, the programming director at the time.
Yeah, yeah. And here we are.
He was born out of an accident.
It's been a fun ride, so whether this is your first time or almost your last time, thanks for tuning in, teching out with us. It's been a lot of fun, and we'll be here through the rest of the new year. We'll be taking a break on the weeks around Christmas, but we'll try to pack in a couple more episodes before we go. So thanks for tuning in, teching out. I'm going to let you go, Mitch, so you can enjoy your break, and I'll see you around. We'll post a schedule on Facebook of when we're going to be holding the rest of our episodes. So thanks for checking in, and we'll see you around.
All right. Up next, we have Doing Radio with Ethan and Hank.
That's right. And so keep it locked here to your only alternative left, WRFL.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.